The opening pages of Don Quixote describe an aging, unmarried gentleman who's so obsessed by books that he's begun to sell off most of his land to pay for his habit. He doesn't just read these stories, he lives them. The art historian Patrick Lenigan describes an 1863 illustration of Don Quixote sitting in his library.
The scene is just overflowing with the figures from his reading popping out of the books, coming out of the corners, coming in through the windows. You've got a princess appealing to him for her rescue on the lower edge. You've got knights fighting in the background. You've got a fantastic head of a giant on the bottom. You've even got mice jousting with each other.
His imagination finally becomes too big for his library. Don Quixote puts on some rusty armor, mounts his horse, and sets off in search of adventures. He brings along a neighbor, Sancho Panza, to be his squire. Meanwhile, his friends sneak into his library to burn his books in order to rid him of his madness.
"What is that huge thing?" asked the priest. "It is Don Olivante de Laura," answered the barber. "The author of that book also wrote The Flower Garden," said the priest. "And to be frank with you, I cannot make out which of the two is the more truthful or the less mendacious. I can only say that for all its arrogant nonsense, it shall go to the yard."
Readers in Cervantes's time knew these titles well. They were part of a burgeoning genre of chivalric romances, stories of knights who sacrifice everything for their ladies and who never stop for lunch. It was just the sort of highly idealized, unrealistic tripe that a man of Cervantes's intellect couldn't stomach, and which he spends 900 pages lampooning. Patricia Grieve is the chairwoman of the Spanish and Portuguese Department at Columbia University.
At one point, Sancho needs to, in the dark of night, relieve himself. And Don Quixote says, what is that noise? And Sancho says, well, it must be an adventure approaching. Hoping that Don Quixote won't find out. And then Don Quixote says, but what is that odor?
For most of the 17th century, it is the rough and tumble humor of slapstick and physical aspects, bodily functions, that they just found uproarious.
The two men don't come upon any giants or damsels or dragons, or at least Sancho doesn't see them, but his master certainly does.
"Monstrous and diabolical crew," Don Quixote called out. "Release immediately the noble princesses whom you are forcibly carrying off in that coach, or prepare to receive instant death." "Sir Knight," they replied, "we're neither monstrous nor diabolical, but two monks of Saint Benedict traveling about our business." "No fair speeches for me, for I know you perfidious scoundrels," cried Don Quixote. Then, without waiting for the reply, he spurred his horse and, with his lance lowered, charged at the foremost monk with such vigor and fury that if he had not slid from his mule, he would have been thrown to the ground and badly hurt.
Now, one of the reasons that this book continues to appeal through the centuries is that although most of us don't think we're knights errant, we constantly come up against situations in which we have an ideal and we have a particular virtue that we would like to embody and embrace. And the particular circumstances are making it very difficult to live up to a certain ideal.
"It is I, Don Quixote de la Mancha. Does that name strike fear in your heart?"
Don Quixote was an instant hit when it appeared in 1605, so much so that another writer stole his characters and published his own sequel a few years later. Cervantes couldn't sue for copyright infringement. He could only outwit his rival. In Cervantes's Part II, completed in 1615, Don Quixote actually meets a character from the bogus Part II.
"I beg your worship," Don Quixote said, "to be so kind as to make a declaration before the mayor of this place that you have never seen me in all the days of your life till today, and that I am not the Don Quixote written of in the second part, nor is this Sancho Panza, my squire, the man your worship knew." "I'll do that with very great pleasure," replied Don Álvaro, "for it's very surprising to see two Don Quixotes and two Sanchos at the same time, alike in their names, yet how very different in their deeds. Let me affirm once more that I did not see what I did see, and that what happened to me did not happen."
At this point, the blurring of the lines between fact, fiction, various readers is just over the top.
For Cervantes, the story was the thing. It's a story about storytelling. But if the story itself doesn't grab you, he doesn't want you as a reader. And he really does tell a great, great tale.
Cowards, do you retreat? I see you scatter like sheep before me.
For Studio 360, I'm Matthew Sherman.
Don't worry, Sancho. The danger is over. We've won a famous victory.
Hooray.